Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Hello, Elizabeth.
Because I'm a grandmother, I just realized, oh yeah, I need to find my glasses.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say you found something sticky in the bottom of your purse.
Yeah, no, there's always that, but yeah, I have my glasses.
Right. Okay, good.
We're good to go. Hello, Carol.
Hello.
It's nice to see you. It's an all-female show today.
I know, right?
Bringing the estrogen.
Yes.
And if you don't know what that means, then you probably need to stay and listen to the show.
You do need to listen, yes. Listen very closely.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. I'm really excited about the show, so I'm going to do a quick intro so we can jump to a conversation with my guests. I have two actors in the studio with me today from PCPA who are here. They're both graduates of PCPA who have returned to do their own one-woman shows in rotating repertory. Each show is very unique and has a phenomenal message. So I'm excited to kind of talk about what they're doing, why these shows, and how timely the subject matter both of these shows are right now, given all that's going on.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Because, you know, every week, whoever's in your chair starts the show by saying to me, Happy Tuesday, what's on your mind today? Or, you know, where are we going today? And I feel like since November 2016... almost every other week, I start with, I'm feeling a little heavy today, or, you know, feeling like there's a struggle or trying to get through. There's been a lot of kind of this ongoing sense of what is happening here.
Yeah. A lot of people share that with you.
Yes. And it's been a long time. And then this week was perfect medicine because after what's been going on for the last couple weeks, you know, what's happened with the hearings and women being triggered, and we talked about that last week and tried to, you know, address when we've been triggered, how do we find healing? And I want to remind everyone that Stand Strong is available in the community to talk about whatever comes up for you, whether it was last week or 50 years ago. We have healing resources out there. Today was opening day for Operation Surf. So we've brought in some returning war heroes who will be here surfing on the Central Coast this week to recapture their voice and their sense of wholeness after trauma. We do have healing resources available.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels like there's been just such continuous assaults on our mental health and well-being. And every time we kind of get up and go, okay, now we can move forward, there's something else. And I went to see one. I'm trying to like not tell the show too much and be kind of coy. But I went to PCPA Thursday night to see An Iliad. So it's Tara Flanagan's one-woman show. And in the middle of the show, or maybe at the end of the show at the talk back, when everyone is asking kind of their classic, you know, theater questions, what, how do you get into your character and, you know, what is your motivation? All I kept thinking was, I just witnessed a woman experience the entire range of human emotions in front of me. And it became so clear that as women, or maybe it's just me, part of our journey in adulthood or in through life is taking our range of emotions and boxing them up. From the time we're little, when we're just free spirited and running through the world, mm-hmm. and laughing one second and crying and right, feeling them all. And then the further we get down the path is of womanhood, motherhood, professional world, grandmotherhood, we become more conditioned to contain our emotions because God forbid we let them out and someone felt uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Or frightened. And so I came away from the show on Thursday night and I thought, that's what needs to happen. That heaviness, that thing on my chest, a thing on all of our chest is this desire to let it out so that we can move forward, to let it out so that we can see other options. Because the reason we get into trouble is that we keep flying into the window like a bird and hoping that the next time it'll be open. We keep kind of doing the same things.
That's a good analogy.
Thank you. It just came out to my head.
The glass ceiling.
Yes. The glass wall instead of the glass ceiling for women. Yeah. But we keep thinking if we keep addressing it the same way, it's going to change. But in counseling and therapy, you know, part of the work is to tell our story and then reframe the story. It's the same story. It's our same life. It's the same things that happened to us. But we switch how we look at what happened to us so that we can see a way out, so we can see new possibilities. And that's what I came away from watching Tara's performance with, is this need to let our voices out so that we can see new options. Because right now it's despair and rage, rage and despair, despair and rage. And then some numbing in the middle that involves Netflix and popcorn. Mm-hmm. And so there's all of the things in between. And then this morning I had the pleasure of seeing Manita Gandhi's written, she wrote and performed her one woman show, Motherland. And part of the essence of the show revolves around a woman's ownership of her body. And so the two shows together now are that full expression of women's experience in the world. And then the last pieces, and how do we bring it all together? Because we can't do it at home hiding under a blanket with Netflix and popcorn. We can't do it raging together. It feels good to get together and rage and pump our fists in the air and be angry, but that's not going to change it. And we can't get there by sitting alone in a counseling room crying and crying and crying. Like, there has to be some sort of healing group, and that's where live theater comes in. That ability to go into the community and you have a common experience, but you don't have to make awkward small talk with anyone with you, right? You're all in the room seeing this thing and
experiencing it together.
You're breathing the same air. You're out in the world, and then you can have your feelings and experience of it, and then you can leave. Mm-hmm. So you haven't been alone. You've been with a group, and you all have been changed. So today we're going to talk about the power of live theater for change in the positive, the ability for epiphanies and awakenings and thought-provoking discussions that can change the way we keep trying to move forward, so that we don't continue to just bounce up against the same glass ceiling or glass wall and feel frustrated. How can we see it, our lives, through a different lens? So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can be part of the conversation by joining us at 805-781-3875. You can find me on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. Send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. And you can always podcast our show through Apple Podcasts or NPR One. Just find A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, leave a review, because that helps get the word out to more people, and you can listen at your convenience. So as always, I look forward to seeing where the hour takes us. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Is a bloom shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck, and you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend, take you out of this place, someone you can lend a hand in return for grace. It's a beautiful.
Visiting actors to PCPA Theater Fest, which is located in Santa Maria. They are both graduates of the PCPA Repertory Conservatory Program. I have Manita Gandhi.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited that you're here. And Tara Flanagan.
Hello. It's so great to be here.
Thank you. And I figured let's just start off talking about these two shows that I've already raved about. Manita, why don't you talk a little bit about Motherland?
Sure. So Motherland is an 85 or 90 minute piece. It's a play that is all autobiographical. And I started writing it in 2015, but most of the material in the play really comes out of trip I had to India. So I'm Indian American, and I was born in Mumbai, but we came over here when I was about a year old. And in 2009, when I went to India, I had a really amazing experience, but also, a lot of a tragic experience as well. One of my brothers decided to get an arranged marriage, and we were so surprised, and she was so lovely, and it ended up being such a beautiful thing. And it was one of those trips where I went back to the motherland, and I really decided that that was the trip, that I was going to take the time to explore India in a way that I hadn't before. So I had really wanted to go study yoga and meditation for a long time, and I wanted to study it in India. And my parents were really hesitant about me staying anywhere in India by myself. But at this point, you know, I had traveled a lot, and I thought, I can do this. So after the wedding and all these magical things that challenged my ideologies about love, and I learned a lot about my family history, I went to a meditation center. And when I was there, the doctor who ran the facility assaulted me. And I learned a lot about the lack of infrastructure in India and also anywhere else in the world that it just doesn't exist to deal with sexual assault and rape. And I stood up and I filed a complaint, and it was a big learning experience for myself as a woman, and also I think the woman I wanted to be in the world. And when I came back to the States, I knew I wanted to do something with the energy of this trip. I didn't know what. And it took me years to heal from the assault. I couldn't write about it. I couldn't do anything. And at the time, I was living in Chicago. After PCPA, I was in Chicago for about 12 years. And a theater company had approached me because I had written a short story that was on the theme of justice. That was the theme of the night. And they asked me if I wanted to write a play because they heard about the story. And I said, okay. And they said, great, well, we'll give you a creative team and two table reads and four public performances. And right around then, I found the suitcase that my dad had traveled with from India to the U.S. when he first came here. And on the back of the suitcase, there was this writing that said, when I die, discard this bag if you like. Until then, it stays. And I thought, that's dramatic. Mm-hmm. And I don't know anything about my parents other than the fact that they are my parents. So I started interviewing my parents, and the play comes out of my family's experience and my own from that trip about being an Indian American woman.
And so this was the experience. The trip was in 2009. Mm-hmm. And so it took till 2015 to really be able to broach the subject. Mm-hmm. And since then, how did you get to PCPA? Where did the play take you? Because it seems like it's been a pretty magical journey.
I think that's probably the perfect word for it. It has been a really magical experience. I remember I did the four public performances at Silk Road Rising in Chicago. And from there, it got asked to be part of the Ignition Festival of New Work at Victory Gardens. And I was lucky to get to do it at Oregon Shakespeare Festival for the Kata Festival. And I think the magic about the show has been, I always think everyone who's supposed to see the show gets to see it, whether it's from a personal experience they've had or the subject matter just relates to them in a certain way, or somebody who says, oh, this is a show that I should bring here. So I've also been able to travel it around to a number of colleges and universities. And PCPA, I went to school in between 2004 and 2006. That's hard to say. And I have, it's such a great, great community at PCPA, and I kept in touch with everybody. So I ran into Mark Boer at Denver Center. They always have a new playwriting festival, and I'd run into him there a couple of years ago, and we were talking about Motherland. And I remember him saying, oh, we should bring you out to PCPA to do that. And then he reached out to me, and it just felt like the right thing to do, because PCPA is actually the first place that I created anything. We were in my second year, there were conservatory projects that were being done, but there was a big changeover happening at PCPA. So there weren't going to be conservatory projects that year. And so I got together with some students, and we talked about creating our own work. And we went to Roger Delorier, who's now the conservatory director, and he gave us the Severson Space, which is where both Tara and I are performing our pieces. And so it just felt really magical to come back and do a piece that I created in the place that is my theatrical home, and also where I learned how to create theater for the first time.
You know, we talk about healing, it's always described in the same way you just talked about creating the play, that there's that journey of coming back to wholeness, that you kind of start where you feel broken and you have to do the work to come around to find your new sense of home within yourself. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that's what this journey with the play has been for you. It kind of took you from you started, I imagine, and it's talked, you talk about in the play, that coming to PCPA and doing the conservatory work was kind of your first break away from the plans your family had for you. And mm-hmm. so it was kind of like your coming of age at that moment. And then you had this full journey back to the space to kind of reclaim who you are.
Yeah, I think that's a really core theme in the show, is how do you define home? And I think in an interesting way, writing this play helped me discover that for myself, because I think writing is such an interesting process. I think writing is actually the first physical activity I can remember doing as a child. And then acting just wasn't on my horizon as a career choice, because I grew up thinking I needed to be an engineer, a lawyer, a doctor, mm-hmm. an English major, one of those things.
The cultural messages you'd received.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think I discarded my idea of how powerful stories are, and stories have always been the way that we relate to each other, that we translate things to each other, that we make things universal, and that we can throw some objectivity on difficult things. And I think it's also how we create social change. And I think through the process of writing this, I ended up coming back to realizing that, I can create social change, which is originally I was going to be in international relations and a women's studies major. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to work for an NGO overseas. And I found that I kind of got back home to the origins of what I love to do. And I think what I feel my purpose is in this world.
Just using your voice mm-hmm. for good. And I felt that also with Tara, we're doing the work of an Iliad. And for those who don't know, it's based on the Iliad by Homer. And it's interesting because in the retelling of the story, there's a lot of assumption that everyone has kind of read the Iliad. And I will admit, I never did. Maybe it was assigned in high school, but I didn't read it. And so I was feeling a little bit, out of my league with some of the story, but it was so beautifully told. And maybe because I didn't know the story, I was able to hear your performance from another perspective. But can you talk a little bit about what brought you to this work and this piece in Iliad?
Sure. I spend most of my summers working for the Great River Shakespeare Festival, which is in Winona, Minnesota. It's a beautiful little festival right on the Mississippi. And we obviously do Shakespeare mm-hmm. there. But as the theater has been growing, we've sought to expand our offerings. It's a small company, so it's small in budget and small in personnel. Obviously, we have a great love for the classics and for language and for story. And so as company members come across plays that resonate with them but also sort of tick some of those boxes, we bring them to the powers that be and present them. And so a dear friend of mine, Andrew Carlson, who is an actor and also a professor on faculty at UT Austin, had encountered an Iliad and felt that it was just a perfect fit for our company. It's a classic story, but it's not presented as a museum piece. It's presented as something that resonates in your contemporary life and is meaningful for you in that way, and yet obviously celebrates language as well, and yet could be done with almost no set. You could make an elaborate set if you so choose, but you don't need it. You just need the storyteller and the story and the audience, and that's all you need. And because I have the good fortune of going back there year after year after year, many of us have built these great relationships as a company. So we know each other. We have a common vocabulary, a common way of working, and we trust each other. And so when he pitched it to our artistic director, Doug Schultz Carlson, he pitched it with me in mind. And he said, I don't know if I want Tara to direct it and me to star in it or vice versa, but I want to work on this with Tara. And so I'm the beneficiary of a great ally and friend who said, I know this is a story about war, and war stories are traditionally told by men. And at that point, there had been a couple of productions starring women, but I only knew of a couple. I'm very happy to say since then there have been dozens and dozens of productions featuring
of
women.
Of an Iliad.
Of an Iliad featuring women, yes, thank you. But at the time, it was still predominantly being done by men, and so I'm just so grateful that he thought, no, I want to hear her voice in this. I want to see this filtered through her as well. And so the two of us co-directed it, and we traded off nights. So he would perform it one night, I would perform it another night. And just as you say, then to hear that story told from a woman's point of view with a female voice, certain parts of that story just resonate in different ways and lift up. And Andrew and I saw most things in a very similar way, but I think for the audience, the experiences were profoundly different. Just to hear a male voice or a female voice or have it filtered through a male interpretation or a female interpretation is really profoundly different for the audience. And I've been so, as an actor, just selfishly gratified by just what you talked about, an opportunity to show the full scope and range of my humanity, all that is good and beautiful and noble and loving, and all that is potentially small and ugly, that women too can be corrupted by power or twisted by grief or have a need for revenge, and that if you cannot see a woman as a whole human being, then she isn't necessarily bound by these limitations, and then all of us are less for it. And it's not that everything that's contained in an Iliad is wonderful or beautiful. Not everything is to be celebrated or emulated, but it is part of the range of being a human.
Yes.
And it brings me huge satisfaction and relief to be able to pour myself into that and then to have these powerful interactions with, very often, with young women who are so moved by the story, yes, but more than that, by seeing themselves up on the stage.
Right, through your journey through the characters, 50 different characters that you play in an Iliad, because you're retelling the tale of the Trojan War, and particularly through the voices of Hector and Achilles.
Correct, okay. Yes.
And so it's very masculine, the story that you're telling, but the part that kept coming up for me and what you said is that life is messy. Is that within the most beautiful times, like in Manita's story, you're there for your brother's wedding, and it's the most glorious time, and it's a beautiful event, and yet you suffer an assault that changes your life. Like, nothing is all good or all awful. We're trying to deal with all things at the same time. And so when Tara's telling the story, there's, you know, Hector's wife and the baby and the beauty of Troy, and yet the rage that comes up that's so palatable that I think a lot of women are feeling right now. Mm-hmm. And there's one moment in your play or your story where you're enraged and then you bring the rage down. Can you talk about that? Because that was a moment that caught my breath, because I think a lot of times we feel like once we're enraged, we're out of control and now just horrible things are going to happen and we feel like it takes us over. So we must avoid that feeling at all costs, or we run away from people who are enraged. But the way you are in that moment of full rage that it's almost terrifying to see you, and then you bring it in.
This play, unlike Manita's play, I did not develop this script. So this script was written by Dennis O'Hare and Lisa Peterson based on Robert Fagel's translation of the Iliad.
Thank you.
So I just want to get that out there. And I think it is an enjoyable evening for people who do know the Iliad. I had not read it in school.
Then I don't feel so bad.
I read it when I got the part, and I grappled with it. But I don't think you have to know that story. I don't think you have to be steeped in that story, because they're just very human stories, and hopefully very relatable. But Homer gets the credit for writing the Iliad, because he wrote it down and put his name on it. But it had been told for generations by numbers of bardic poets who traveled the land, would go to a particular community, be in a tavern or a bar, there's the audience, and would adapt that story for those people who were there. So that is the original tradition of the Iliad, the story of the Trojan War being told. And I felt like Dennis O'Hare and Lisa Peterson really just keyed into that beautifully in their version of the poet, who is unnamed in this iteration of the story, that the poet is there to tell that story to the particular people in that room and to make it relatable for them in that moment, as if some of it's being improvised and created just for the people in that room. Mm-hmm. And what I love about that is all that is beautiful about humanity is shared between us, but also rage that we are all complicit in it, whether or not our lives, like my life, I live a very privileged life. My life has not been ravaged by war. I have not personally participated in war. And I am sort of, I call myself like next door to a pacifist. Mm-hmm. And I can sort of pat myself on the back for some of that and perhaps look with compassion, but maybe with disdain at people whose lives are more ravaged by rage than mine is. But really, when it comes down to it, that is just a human thing. And we all experience it, and we are all complicit in it. And this play finds lots of ways to help us take ownership for that. And then to ask the question, how might we move beyond that? Is it possible for us to move beyond that? What would it take, and what would it look like? And this moment, that I believe the moment that I think that they're speaking about, if I have it right, there's a character in the play who, in the midst of rage, doesn't have a moment of thoughtfulness or transcendence, but simply decides in the midst of rage not to act on it.
Yeah.
And I think they're onto something.
Mm-hmm.
That it isn't about some great moment of clarity or wisdom, or I've moved beyond these feelings, I'm not feeling this way anymore. It will take somebody in the midst of the feelings to decide to set it aside.
To just stop.
And to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to reach for something else.
And I thought that was what was so profound, because it spoke to so many situations in all of our lives. And what I was feeling like that day when I came to see the show on Thursday in the midst of the hearings, and in that moment when the character just takes a breath and just stops, I thought, oh yeah, we all have that choice every day, take a breath and to see things from a different lens. Because it goes on, I think, from that point, start saying, what if we just stop how we're engaging, mm-hmm. and see each other in a different light? If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and I have two guests in the studio today, Manita Gandhi and Tara Flanagan, both actors from PCPA. They're visiting actors. They're both graduates of the program, and they're here presenting in rotating repertory their one-woman shows, Manita's Motherland, which she wrote and performs herself and also won a regional Emmy for. Is that correct?
There was a documentary that was made about them called My Motherland that won a regional Emmy. But the show is Jeff nominated for best solo work and best new play.
Congratulations. Thank you. We're also celebrating Manita's work. And then Tara's one woman's performance is in An Iliad, which is based on Homer's The Iliad. And we're going to take a couple breaths here. Now that we've got the story set, we're going to come back and let's explore some of the themes and how they relate to what's going on today. We'll also be opening up the phone lines at 805-781-3875. You can also participate by sending us an email, or if you'd like to call and leave your question with Carol, I know she's happy to take it. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
I ain't gonna do you wrong.
Gosh, I remember that moment in
Why
your place.
You
Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, the Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. And I'm with Tara Flanagan and Manita Gandhi from PCPA. And before we get too far, I want to make sure people know that the shows run through October 21st, and you alternate performances. They're Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 1:30 and 7 p.m. You can go online to PCPA to get tickets. What I loved, because now I'm getting old and lazy, and it's easier to just stay in my house, that the shows both are one act, so there's not an intermission. It's an hour and 40, 45 minutes, so you're fully engrossed in it, and then you're still awake enough after the show to have a conversation. But the shows are only running for another 2 weekends, so yeah. If you're interested, please get out there and see them. So let's jump to kind of how you see your shows right now and why they dance so nicely together in repertoire. You know, what do you see is the connection?
Oh, goodness. I feel like they're, you know, we were just actually talking about this in the car ride over. I think something beautiful right now is, particularly with everything that's going on in the world, to have two solo plays that are performed by women that are written and, in Tara's place, co-written by another woman, mm-hmm. right, with Dennis O'Hare. I think that in itself is powerful. I think something that we just touched upon is, I think representation matters. And I think that's something that I notice, you know, at PCPA with the people that I talk to during the talkback and after the talkback. The first time I did the show in front of an audience, I had a young woman come up to me. She's Filipina, and she looked at me and she said, "I'm Filipina," and she just started shaking and crying and said, "I've never seen my story, my culture represented." And, you know, and I just was holding her in my hands. And I think to see so many people be touched by the fact that we're women, we're telling stories that are complex and complicated. And to what you were saying, I think going across the board and the canon in terms of the emotions, because we are not, you know, just boxes that you can check off, but we can equally share rage and empathy and compassion. And I know sometimes as an actor, you know, in my career, sometimes I've been boxed into, oh, you're going to play the love interest, or you're going to be the dramatic role, or you're going to be just comedic. And the truth is, we all as humans have every single thing in each one of us. And I think it's a great time for people to come and see women tell these stories with the full range of the capacity that we have to do it in.
And that's what it kept coming back for me too, is the freedom to express all the emotions. And then you always can come back to that center, because I think part of the story we've been told about women is that if you set a woman off, she'll become hysterical and then she's out of control. And so that mythology has carried on for generations. You know, Freud started his whole career deeming that women were too hysterical to do anything of import. And then both of these stories show your characters feel all the feelings and then come back to a wholeness each time. You know, you both come back to wholeness. And that's, I think, what every young woman and older woman should see, that we don't have to fear our emotions.
Yes.
Let alone the people experiencing them with us. But I think we as women have been taught to hold in and fear our emotions.
Oh, yes. I mean, the job of an actor is to empathize, right? Mm-hmm. We hear it over and over in training. You cannot judge your character. That's for the audience to do. But as the actor, you have to make their case for them. Mm-hmm. And then to make a case for somebody who is confused or enraged or stricken by grief or manipulative, mm-hmm. or any number of things that maybe are not pleasant or attractive, is not comfortable. Mm-hmm. And yet to have an opportunity to let go of any apology or soft filter that you've put over the rough edges, mm-hmm. of your humanity. It sounds strange to say, because we're both in plays that are dealing with some painful matters, but it is a huge relief. It feels so good for all of us to be seen and heard. And it's not about look at me, look at me, look at me, but to just allow yourself to be fully human. People respond to that. Women respond to it. Young ladies respond to it. Men respond to it.
Yes.
Men of all ages respond to it.
Yes.
And it's a huge gift that I've been given as an artist, but it feels bigger than me in the moment, and that's always really gratifying too.
And you said something that struck me was, we always want to, you know, look attractive, that we don't want to behave in such a way that would be deemed unattractive. And I think there's some lines from your parents in your show talking about, you know, you need to be desirable or no one will want to marry you. Mm-hmm. And so there's that constant message from the time we're young, don't let the ugly emotions show. Because clearly we could never snivel and cry during a job interview and still get the job interview, right? Because as women, it's always about you better have a pretty cry. Right? Don't cry ugly.
Yeah, I have no pretty cry.
Yeah,
I
same.
Only have full-on ugly cry.
That's also something that people will see in both of our shows. Yes. You know, it's real. I don't know about you, Tara, but there are so many times where I'm crying so hard or I'm screaming and I know that there is snot dripping down my nose and it's just me on stage, so I'll have to wipe it. But that's what we do as human beings. And I think the other thing that's so interesting is, you know, whether it's we're telling this Greek mythology or whether we're sharing a story about being Indian American from multiple generations, there are things that are so highly universal. And I think what's interesting about seeing women play, you know, we play men and women of all different ages, is that we start to realize, I think as an audience member, oh, this isn't about being a man or a woman. This is a human thing.
Great
and that's
point.
Huge.
Great point. Because you both do play multitudes of characters. Tara is 50, and I'm not sure how many, probably at least 15.
Yeah, I play 15 to 20, yeah.
So that you're right that as I was watching you this morning perform it, I'd lost track of you. It was just the story. Mm-hmm. And this is what Tara like. And it was the same as you as well. And also with an Iliad, I wanted to point out, is that I kept getting that feeling of 50 first dates from the poets or the narrator's piece. You looked exhausted. It's like, do I have to keep telling this story? Are we going to forever keep having war? Because the wars are the same. And you just, it was almost all that, and I felt it from a woman's perspective, just that why does this masculine raging energy keep dominating us? Because we all, men and women, are tired.
We're tired. It's a beautiful thing that the playwrights have built into this version of an Iliad that the poet sort of has two tracks, the fate of having to tell this story again and again and again and again and again, and this sort of secret track that the poet has started of, I would like to get out of this. Mm-hmm. I would like to get out of this story, and I don't want to tell it anymore. And then I feel like the poet is on this secret mission with the audience. If I could frame it the right way, if I could come up with the right metaphor, and if I could keep checking in with you, maybe one of you will be able to say the thing, give us the secret
that ends this,
that could get us out of the cycle.
Yes. Yeah.
And of course there isn't some sort of secret fix it, except the idea that we will choose not to engage in it. But I was thinking too about I'm now at an age where I've watched different kinds of cycles go around a few times. And once you've seen cycles go around a few times, then sometimes you get lost in the middle of them and you think, oh, did this happen 10 years ago? Mm-hmm. Or did this happen 5 years ago?
Yeah.
What thing am I thinking of? And there's an element of that in the piece too, except it's related to rage and our propensity for violence, and that we get caught up in the minutiae and we think that the minutiae is what's important.
Yes.
And we lose the fact that this is just something we've always done. We've always done, and we could choose to not do it.
To just take that breath. I just will forever watch you move, because it's a little terrifying, the level of rage you're able to express. Beautiful and frightening, but then to be able to call a stop to it. And I keep going back to what I said at the beginning of the show, that we can't move in another direction until we fully expressed what we're feeling. Mm-hmm. And then that clears us to see things a new way. If we keep running up to the feelings and then stopping ourselves, we keep running up to the point of breaking down or screaming or raging, and then we pull back because it's not attractive or pretty, we keep being stuck because nothing breaks through. And I feel that's with both stories, is you both give the audience an opportunity to watch the breakthrough. And it's not terrifying. It's not overwhelming. We don't disintegrate. You actually both end up your stories whole. And I think that's what I loved and was so powerful, because we need to know the end of the story. We just keep getting up to the edge and pound our fists in the air, but we don't break through and try another tact.
Yeah.
And Manita, much of your story centers around sexual assault. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure we touched on that, because what stood out for me was the fact that you were believed when you told the story to your parents. And I think that is unique a bit and maybe helped in your ability to heal.
That's a really interesting point that you brought up. You know, I didn't deal with what a lot of survivors deal with, which is that nobody believed me. What I did deal with that still really sticks out for me is the number of people that said, treat it like a bad dream.
Yes.
And
just let it go.
And just let it go. And I think that is something that no matter where you're raised, I think for my generation, that's a lot of what our parents were raised with. And that's what was imparted upon myself. And I think it just happened to be that at that time when I was in India, I will never remember, and I can't remember another time in my life where I have ever physically felt like I am ready to die for something. Like I remember after the assault, I just thought, I have to file this complaint. I have to do something because this man is going to do this to somebody else. And, you know, I can't live with myself if that happens. And my dad, even though he very much believed me and was able to come and meet me the next morning, you know, I hadn't slept, I hadn't showered, and he didn't want me to file the complaint. It was essentially filing a complaint against the Catholic Church because it was this meditation center that I went to was attached to one of the largest Hindu temples in the country. And there's a lot of money and a lot of power and a lot of reputation at stake. Mm-hmm. And I, looking back, realize how much they tried to actually intimidate me. Mm-hmm. Like, I think about it now, but I didn't think about it then, that the day after the assault, I got put into a room in the temple with 10 men, including the man who raped me. And that's not how it should go. And that these men, none of them believed me. Mm-hmm. And that they spoke in another language, thinking I didn't understand, trying to say, oh, she's an American actress, as though that was a reason why I had asked for something to have happened.
Because, of course, you were making this up because you're an actress.
Right. And it was wild. But I do think that what is amazing to what you're saying is, you know, people say it all the time. And for anyone and everyone who's listening, saying, I believe you and I hear you, to somebody who has survived an assault is literally one of the most important things that you can do, because mm-hmm. – And it doesn't matter how many times you say it. Say it as many times as you want, because they need to hear it. We need to hear it.
And I'm glad you brought the other piece of it, because I was just stunned by the fact that your parents so quickly believed you, because I don't believe that that's the way it goes for most young women. Or for many young women, we wouldn't tell our parents for fear of what our fathers would do. Uh-huh. So I think that is a piece that holds us back, that part. But then again, even though your parents did believe you, there was that sense of, but we need to let it go now and make it go away. And I think that again illustrates this. As women, we keep getting up to this place of knocking on the door of owning our own power, and then we're told to back off mm-hmm. because you won't be attractive anymore to anyone. You'll be damaged. We don't want to see you being hysterical. So just treat it like a bad dream.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when it's really interesting. So I actually, when I started writing the play, you know, this is the first play I've ever written, and I didn't know what I was doing. And someone gave me great advice, which is, don't worry that you don't know how to write a play, just write it. So I had strung together all these stories, and to me, the story up until the sexual assault, I say the play is 85% really funny.
It is. I keep wanting to say to you, it's a dark comedy. There was much more laughter than tears.
But then when you get to the assault, then obviously everything shifts. And I think that's what happens in our life. We're not defined by that moment. We have all of these things happen. We're living our lives. And then the assault happens. And I think, you know, it's just really important to be able to believe someone. I was lucky that that happened. But when I was writing the play, I didn't put the assault in initially. Mm. So I was doing it with I was having another actor read through the play, and I was, you know, making cuts and doing things. And everyone asked me during that table read, well, what happens here at this part in India? Something's missing. And there were some people on the creative team that knew me, and they said, is that, you know, when the assault happened? And I said, yes. And literally the week that we were doing that table read, Leslie Udwin's documentary, India's Daughter, which was about the terrible gang rape that happened to a young woman named Jyoti in India, where she died from being gang raped. And I think a lot of people will remember because there were all the protests that had happened in India against sexual violence. Leslie had made this beautiful documentary, and the Indian government banned it from being shown in India because they said it would defame the country. And that happened right when I was writing it. And so it was – I realized that in a way I was victim-shaming myself because I thought, oh, I'm going to disgrace my – it was just in my head and I didn't realize it. I'm going to disgrace my family. You know, what
because
if I talk about this?
Me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's silly. It's ridiculous because I don't want anyone else to feel that way. So that's how the assault ended up in the play. And it's there in detail. But I think in a way, a lot of people I've talked to that are survivors that have come to the show have told me that there's something healing about it.
Absolutely. I felt that. That's what was beautiful is that you went through the door, and even though you were told to retreat, you kept pushing and found beauty again with yourself and with your homeland.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests are Manita Gandhi and Tara Flanagan from PCBA, and we're talking about their powerful one-woman shows that will be performing through October 21st in Iliad and Motherland. And what does the experience of performing in Iliad do for you, Tara? What has it brought to your life? Because you've been doing it for a few years now. How has this changed you?
Well, as a performer, I've never had a chance to do anything so expansive, so varied, so rich. And so that just feels like a treasure trove of artistic opportunity that I'm very deeply grateful for. And a really nice side effect of being middle-aged is that you can sometimes recognize when an experience is special mm-hmm. and really appreciate it while it is happening, which is nice.
It's true.
It's really nice. But beyond that, I've had a chance to have so many conversations with veterans and with veterans' families and with refugees and families of refugees, women who are survivors of violence, all kinds of conversations with parts of our community that with whom I don't normally come into contact mm-hmm. and don't normally have an opening for conversation. The people in my family who served in the military served before I was born in wars that I did not experience. The people in my family who were refugees were dead long before I ever came into existence. And so that is a part of our country's tapestry that I can kind of choose to opt into and pay attention to or choose to opt out of and not know anything about. And so it's been really profoundly moving and has shifted something in me to have conversation with those people who have had very different experiences in this world. I also have come to appreciate the Greeks a little bit in a way that really surprised me because I'm not somebody who's necessarily drawn to stories of war. And the Greek culture certainly celebrates war. I mean, we do in our own culture. It's just oftentimes a fictionalized mm-hmm. version.
A glorified yeah. version, yes.
Yeah, we certainly do glorify. Mm-hmm. But the flip side of that is that there was a mechanism built into the fabric of society for people who were involved in war to have their stories told to the entire community when they came back. And just as you talked about earlier, there's so much profound beauty to be found in the midst of even the worst of human situations. Mm-hmm. But whether or not you're glorifying feats of war, the full range of their activity, there was a mechanism built in society for those stories to be told and heard and received, and it was part of the world. And for our own returning veterans, we do not provide that for them. Maybe certain communities do, maybe certain individuals do, but as a collective country, we do not do that. And I think it must be so important and healthy for people to know that their society who sends them to war is not only like ready to hear their stories, but is providing opportunity for that processing and potential healing and recognition of our mutual responsibility in all of those actions. I wish we could make more space for that.
But I wonder if in some ways, because the war was happening on their homeland, you know, our wars happen out of our sight. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have to deal with it. But as you're telling the story, I guess it's that same thing that nothing is separate.
Yeah.
That Hector is having a conversation with his wife and his baby. And then a half hour later, he's on the battle lines in war. And and so I think that's why it's so integrated and the stories are so part of it, because there was such structure. The war was almost built into their routine, the way commuting is built into our routine in some ways.
Yeah. But art is sort of there to, I don't know, like all of these feelings of anxiety or rage or confusion, where do we put them? We put them into art. That's why sculpture exists and painting exists. And theater is that thing that exists between the community and the artist live in a room. And I that struck me, and that thought had not occurred to me before I worked on this play, and it's something that I really carry with me now. And so every time I have a chance to do this play again, I try to the best of my ability to coordinate with the people who run the theater. Who are the groups we can reach out to? Who can we invite? What are the conversations that we can help foster beyond just the performance of this play?
And it is why live theater is so powerful. And I guess that's was motivated the show for me this week, is I found myself in the last couple of years, which a little bit unlike me, retreating more than usual, watching too much news alone, saying I'm too busy to friends to go to shows or, you know, go to the movies, just a lot of kind of turning in, doing my outward day, but then at night turning in, and just going out last week and being in the community, sitting with strangers in a room, just I left feeling awake and alive in a way that I hadn't. And so I wanted to bring the show here today to encourage people who are feeling the same way, a little bit defeated, a little bit discouraged, a little bit tired, to rouse themselves to go have an experience, to see someone tell a story that's going to resonate.
Yeah, and I think there's something that is just priceless and magical about being in a space with other people in your community that you start off, you start off as strangers in the theater, all these other people that are sitting there with you and all the actors on the stage or the actor on stage. And then by the end, you leave having had an experience together that redefines or brings forth that feeling of community, because you've laughed together, you've cried together. And what's really interesting about the way both of the shows are structured in the space, it's in a thrust.
I don't know what that means.
So the audience is on is on three sides. Okay. So I think that's a really exciting experience for the audience. You go into the Severson Theater and you're not watching the actor, but you're also in this really unique position to watch the audience's reactions to the show. And that does even, I think, more so of what you're saying. And I do think that, unfortunately, we are, especially at a time like that in our world and in our community, and we can have this shared experience to make us feel a little bit more whole again.
And so how has this journey with Motherland changed you?
That's a really great and big question. The journey with Motherland has changed me in so many ways that I would not have known when I first started writing the play. And I think to piggyback a little bit off of what Tara was saying, I didn't know that this story would resonate in such a universal way for so many men, for so many women, for so many survivors, for so many first, second, third generation immigrants, for those who have just come over who there are people that come up to me after the show and say, my dad has that same suitcase that he came over with, or my grandmother came over with that, or gosh, my parents and I talk about that thing, or oh my gosh, I can't believe you talked about the first time you saw a penis, and that's how I felt too. Or, we can laugh about all these things, or thank you for sharing the story. I am also a survivor, and hearing you say that makes me feel like I can talk about it now. I did not know that this show would create a larger sense of healing and community. I didn't know that. I just knew I had a story to tell. I didn't know that it would create ripples in a theater community that would allow actors to say, hey, you know what? I actually want to write too. I see you do that. Or, you know, a young woman of color or a man of color saying, oh, I didn't know I could tell that story about us because we've been doing theater that's been very white and black for a really long time. And so I guess in a lot of ways, it's made me realize that we can use our art as activism, mm-hmm. and it's one of the best ways to use it.
And to not feel alone.
Yes. Because
when we sit in a room by ourselves, raging and shaking our fists, it just ends up making us tired. We're beating ourselves up. And we go out into the world together. We can feel that full range of emotions together through the actors and then feel enlivened maybe to choose another path. I want to thank both of you for coming in this afternoon, and I want to encourage everyone to go to PCPA's website, look for Aeneid and Motherland. They will be in rotating repertory over the next 2 weekends. You'll get to see Manita's original work and Tara's fabulous journey in storytelling, and this return home to the place where you both began your acting careers. Mm-hmm. So as always, I want to thank you for being a part of the conversation. You can share your comments with us on Facebook, The Reluctant Therapist. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast the show and listen to it at your convenience or share it with friends. But as always, thank you for the opportunity to share our stories, and I look forward to being back next week. Sharing Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.